Tibbs, man, he's amazing. Me and him really hit it off just because from the beginning, I saw how serious he took his craft, and he saw how serious I took the craft.
If you're a young player and you come into the gym and you see a guy who is your best player, they're the first one in, last one to leave, coming back at night, that's leadership to me. That's the best type of leadership that you can have.
They say that true love is your soul's recognition of its counterpoint in another, which explains why this bromance between Julius Randle and Tom Thibodeau has defibrillated the heart of New York City. Madison Square Garden has fallen hard for a Knicks team that is more electrifying together than I ever imagined. So today, Nick Friedell tells the story of how two old souls are trying to revive a city. And then Rob Domofsky joins us from Green Bay to determine whether Aaron Rodgers is trying to break Wisconsin's heart in slow motion. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, May 26th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by UKG. Our purpose is people. Nick Friedell, thank you for joining me on ESPN Daily, man.
Anytime, buddy.
Nick Friedell writes about the NBA for ESPN, and he has covered Knicks coach Tom Thibodeau for more than a decade. So I speak to you through something of a haze, because this entire city, New York City, is high on a drug called the New York Knicks. And it's a lot, Nick. Like, this whole city is cursing, quite literally, at Trae Young.
An obscene Trae Young chant erupts as Randle.
There's a sense of just utter delirium, and it is a drug that I swore off a while ago, but I must admit, it is insanely fun right now. And the reason why this whole trip might be good is because of the two men that you've profiled for us here today. Julius Randle, the NBA's most improved player officially, and Tom Thibodeau. So let's start with Tibbs here, Nick, because you go way back with him, back to your days covering him in Chicago. How would you describe what that dude is even like?
He is completely nuts day to day in his desire to win games, Pablo. I talked to a bunch of guys who played for him in this story, and it was kind of funny because they all said the same thing. They said they've never been around anybody who is about the attention to detail more than Tibbs.
Get our ball pressure strong. Make him feel you. Get up into him. Get up into him.
This is how you got to be. You got to be moving with the ball. After being around you guys all season, I believe that you got the greatness in you. You can get this done. Win this game. That's all I want you thinking about.
If you were trying to draw a through line through Tom and all the guys that he's coached, the phrase that he uses more than almost any other is, I can hear him saying it right now in my brain. He said it so many times. The magic is in the work.
You know, we always say the magic is in the work, and it really is. I think it's an improvement.
And he says it, and it's like a life mantra for him. It's how he's gotten to this point in his career. It's how the Knicks have gotten to the point they've gotten in this season. You can fix damn near anything by just working harder.
You guys keep pushing. Keep pushing. Don't give in. Push through the pain.
And it's a life lesson that he has passed on to every player and team that he's come across through the years.
I didn't think your voice could get lower, Nick. That was an incredible impression.
Years in the making. Years and years in the making.
So the magic is the work, though. I mean, that is both an inspiring mantra that this guy lives by. It's also like what might be posted on the wall of a particularly nightmarish school that I don't want to attend, right? Like, there is something to the notion of, wow, that does not sound fun. So the idea that Tibbs has these guys, that these NBA stars specifically would want to enroll in this school, I'm fascinated by that. What does it mean to be a Tibbs guy?
A Tibbs guy is somebody who not only is going to work hard, but he embodies the traits of Tom. It's a very small subsect of the players that he's coached. Because you can play for Tibbs and you can give everything you have and you can work really hard and you can still not be a Tibbs guy. Tom loves to say there's always an excuse in the NBA if you want to see one. There's always a reason why you wouldn't be able to get up for another game. Back to back, 4-5, day game, night game. There's always something built in that would make it easy for a team to roll over on any given night. Tom does not believe in that. Thibodeau is about today. That's the only thing on his mind, today. And if you're a Tibbs guy, that's what you have to believe in as well. Pablo, if we were to boil all this down, if you're a Tibbs guy and he trusts you, he trusts that every single day, game, practice, you're going to really bust your ass and you're going to know what to do and how to carry out what he wants all the time. Doesn't necessarily have to be a star player, but it has to be a guy that he knows he can count on every single day with how he performs and how he carries himself. And the guys that come to mind when we talk about this through the years, it's guys like Taj Gibson.
Dishing off for Gibson. Taj Gibson now with 9 points over the first 7 minutes.
Taj is the highest ranking Tibbs guy because he not only believes in that, he has been with Tom at every step. He was with him in Chicago, in Minnesota, now in New York.
It's extremely important just to have that bond, to have that kind of connection to where he can count on you as a coach, and even better, as a player, you can go to his office and know that he's not going to sugarcoat anything to you. He's going to give you the best information. He's going to try to push you. It all comes down to the body of work. And seeing how hard you work on a day-to-day basis, how eager you are to learn.
It's almost like you get kind of knighted by the man himself. The comparison has been made, it's like Bill Parcells. When Bill Parcells would go to these different places, he would always bring a couple guys with him. Well, now Taj and Derrick Rose are those guys. And when Tom came to the Bulls, you know, 10, 12 years ago, it was Scalabrine and Kurt Thomas. Like all these guys who had seen him and knew what he was about, they kind of put the lessons in for the younger guys on the team.
I love that there is a power rankings of Tibbs guys, and all of them, I think, have something kind of wrong with them. And I say that, again, in awe, because there is a wiring thing that is entirely contradictory here, given the modern NBA, Nick. Like, the guys that you've described who buy in this way, it's telling that across the city, the other great success story that far fewer people give any amounts of crap about is the Brooklyn Nets. Mm-hmm. And Steve Nash is, like, actively and proudly load managing. He's cutting out practices. He is seemingly, in many ways, the opposite of Tibbs, because it would seem the modern NBA is the opposite of Tibbs.
Pablo, I think that is a really good way to put it. In fact, I'm kind of laughing in my head thinking of this story that Kyle Korver told. He said that when Tibbs came to the Bulls, they were in Cleveland the year that the Cavs had lost like 26 in a row. Mm. And they walk into the gym and it's like in December. And he said it's like 10-20 below outside with the wind chill, and they're doing closeout drills during a shootaround. And so all these guys are looking around at each other like, this guy's insane. Like, Tibbs is nuts. And they would get back on the bus and they would say, are we pushing it too hard? And they would look back and be like, well, we haven't lost two in a row all season long. So the proof was always in the pudding as far as Tibbs and his teams were concerned. They always won. Those first 2 years when he was in Chicago, they led the league in wins. Now, this is where the argument can be made. Okay, well, what happened after that? And any Tibbs detractors, they'll always use He's overworking his guys. He can't adjust.
Yes.
But what I would tell you in not only talking to Taj, but talking to the people who have known Tom for as long as they have, they say that he has mellowed just a little bit.
Wait. What is mellowing for Tom Thibodeau look like? Because I will point this out, Julius Randle and RJ Barrett led the NBA in minutes, Nick.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That was pretty much a guarantee. This is probably one of the best ways to describe it. Taj Gibson, when he came to the Bulls, he's been honest in saying, like, in those first few years, he said it took 2 or 3 years for Tibbs to really talk to him.
At first, it's like it's tough sometimes when you're a young guy, you're trying to figure out what the coach wants, what the coach likes. Like, how can you really fit in? How can you get into rotation?
He said for those first 2 or 3 years, they didn't have a lot of conversations because Tibbs was so focused on getting the game plan in, getting his players to be the best they could be, to star in their role, and the personal communication that wasn't there as much. And Taj was cracking me up because he was like, I saw Tibbs talking to Obi the other day, Obi Toppin.
Now I'm starting to see him talk to Obi even more, and he's even encouraging Obi even more. Like yesterday in film, he was just giving him so many good points of how as well he's been growing on his defense and different things. And I was looking at Tibbs like, whoa, you know, Obi, you're doing good, man. Like, he's a lot more easygoing.
Wait. So merely talking to the rookies, that is the mellowing we're describing.
That's right. That's the softer side.
You have this quote from Joakim Noah, who had the Knicks experience of my nightmares, but he has this fondness for Tibbs that really did open my eyes, even as somebody who has been critical and is often dubious about whether this guy gets modern basketball.
Joakim is the perfect case study. Pablo, people forget Joakim a few years ago. He was like top 3 or 4 in the MVP conversation. He won the Defensive Player of the Year. He was going to the All-Star game.
Yes.
At the beginning, Joe loved Tom, loved him. But the way that Tom pushes, he can be a taskmaster. And I think at the end of his Bulls tenure, he had kind of lost Joakim. I think the messaging had just grown tiresome. And being pushed that hard every day had worn on Joe. But Pablo, as he looks back now, he says, I needed that. And he said that Tibbs said to him, Joe, even the guys who hate me always come back. Yeah, there are guys that get pushed over the edge. And yeah, the work can be so demanding and they could get so tired of that voice. But when they look back, even the guys who couldn't stand Tibbs in the end, the respect is always there.
Okay, Nick, after the break, I want to talk to you about the guy who was just named the most improved player in the NBA and how he got there by buying into this religion that you've described.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So, Julius Randle, Nick, that is not someone that I would have identified in that sort of Minority Report pre-Cog way as, oh, that's a future Tibbs guy. I did not realize that these two guys would have a relationship that had the depth that you've now reported. So what was Randle even hoping for in a coach before Tibbs arrived there this season?
He wanted somebody to hold him accountable. He wanted a coach to come in and put in that work with him. And in listening back to what he's saying, I mean, truly, what he was describing was Tibbs.
He's in there late at night. I go in the gym at night and his light is still on. Dude's in there looking at film, taking down notes or whatever it is. Like, he loves basketball. And I think he really saw that about me. It's like, I'm serious about the game of basketball. I love basketball. I want to get better. I want to improve.
When I first got hired, I asked them to, you know, come in so we could spend some time just to get to know each other. And when I saw, like, he was in incredible shape, and I saw his work capacity, and I could see how hungry he was. And, you know, I felt like, okay, this is a guy that could help set the tone for us.
You just don't hear that a lot in the NBA, a head coach working out all the individual players. That doesn't happen all the time. And the bond that has been forged was formed all those months ago when those two were on the floor together, getting to know each other and putting in the work.
Just as training camp went along and the season went along, I really just could sense the belief that he had in me as a player and, you know, kind of how he was empowering me.
Randle, as a guy who got hurt instantly in his rookie year and bounced around the league a little bit and didn't have the best reputation as far as the guy who was going to deliver at the heights that people thought he would coming out of Kentucky, to have that coach who went, yeah, I've played against you and I've game planned against you and I know how good you are, and then to follow that up with the work ethic that the guy loved so much, it really was a match made in basketball heaven, because Randle needed Tom as much as Tom needed Randle, and that partnership has blossomed.
Yeah, these were two reclamation projects, Nick. I mean, in terms of Randle, who was obviously a lottery pick, really highly touted, coming out of Kentucky, a basketball factory, gets drafted by the Lakers in 2014. How would you describe his career before he gets to the Knicks and he gets to Tibbs?
A talented player who had not reached his full potential. This was somebody who everyone in the league knew could play, but nobody was sure you could build around. And that was the confidence that Tibbs and the Knicks have given Julius Randle. This is why when Tibbs appears on the scene, if the first thing you think of is work, 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 and the work ethic's got to be there, the second is of maximizing the potential of players on the roster that maybe the rest of the league has written off or doesn't believe in the same way. You can go down the line in Chicago. Derrick Rose was the MVP of the league under Tibbs. Luol Deng made the All-Star team. Noah becomes a Defensive Player of the Year. Jimmy Butler becomes an All-Star after being the last guy on the bench. This is what Tom Thibodeau does. He takes players who have been cast aside or who are miscast in certain roles on teams, and he pushes them to a different place in their own careers. And this is why even the guys that couldn't stand Tibbs at various points during their time together, that fondness is there that Noah talked about, because they know at that moment in their careers, they were playing at their very best. And Randle is the latest example of that.
So when I think of the magic is the work in the context of Julius Randle, Nick, I am curious, what has changed and evolved within him? Because of Tibbs, how has his game changed?
I think he's in the best shape of his entire career, which is another crucial aspect of anybody who plays for Tom Thibodeau. You better be able to play a lot of minutes, and you better be in great shape. But The difference is he's shooting the ball better than he ever has. Mm. The repetition in getting that three-point shot to where it is, the ability to take guys down on the blocks and throw it down right through everybody, it's the confidence level has gone to a completely different place. He can shoot it from anywhere on the floor now, and if you try to guard him and take away that three, he's going to go right by you. He's going to dunk your arm in the rim.
So despite all of that, Nick, I do feel like we have to talk about the elephant in the room here, which was game one against the Atlanta Hawks. Because if Tom Thibodeau and Julius Randle are in this relationship now, it feels like we're about to find out if the honeymoon period just ended. Because Randle went 6-for-23 from the field, scored just 15 points. It was as bad a game as I've seen him play all season. And it was a game that the Knicks very clearly feel like they should have won.
Young on the floater puts it in. Trae Young with a miraculous shot. The Atlanta Hawks come to New York and throw down the gauntlet by taking game one.
When you saw what was happening at the Garden, what were you thinking? How do you think Tom and Julius deal with that degree of setback?
Well, first of all, I was thinking that I wish you and I had been sitting in there going nuts like everybody else.
Yes.
Oh, because God. I'm watching that game going, we're back. As a fan, as somebody who has covered monster Nick games in the Garden where people are losing their minds, that was the big takeaway.
Dude, Tim Bontemps sent me a video of Knicks fans. Timmy B, the hardest backslapper in the NBA, sent me a video.
Hey, Pally, what's up, Pablo?
Sent me a video of Knicks fans giving Stephen A standing ovation pregame. It was like, oh my God. This building, if they had won that game, might have exploded. Literally.
Oh man, that's awesome. And Pablo, real quickly, Tom always understood what this job represented, what being in New York meant, what that team meant to that city. Tibbs always, always wanted that piece of the Knicks because he knew when times were good how special it was. So I know the guy hardly ever smiles, but when he walked out for that game and that place was rocking, he must have been in there like, oh, baby, yeah, it's on. Because he knew all along for years how special that place could be. But on the point about the game, I think it's a really good description about whether or not the honeymoon will continue. Because all these stories are all well and good, but if you don't win, it all kind of fades away.
Right? I mean, that's the core of the religion, right?
Yeah.
The magic is the work, and the results of the work is winning.
Right. And the biggest question that so many people had about this team was who was going to score late in playoff games. Mm. You saw the Hawks had it with Trae Young and Bogdanovich hit some big shots. And it seemed like it was either Randle, and he just wasn't on in game one, or Derek. And after that, I mean, Alec Burks got hot in the fourth, but are you relying on Alec Burks every time in a playoff game? Probably not.
Probably not going to score 27 again in this series, if I had to guess.
It's probably not going to happen. So as far as Tibbs and Randle go, it's a guarantee that he will go back in and they'll watch the tape together. And they will find some way to exploit and create more space for Randle to operate. But Pablo, this is the issue moving forward for the Knicks. Because no matter what happens the rest of this series, as much as you want to believe in the religion of Tibbs, the Tao of Tibbs, Tibbs knows more than anybody there is that you have to have stars in order to reach different levels in the game. This Knicks team has a lot of nice young pieces, but they need more stars. I don't think there's any way right now with the way the roster is that they can go much farther than the first round. The question will be, can he land the stars that he couldn't land back in time in Chicago, now with the Knicks, with the city of New York absolutely adoring what's going on with that team? And if the Knicks, whether by trade or free agency, whatever happens, if they land that guy, they have to land a guy who knows that they better come to put in the work. Because if you are not willing to do that, then you don't have a chance to succeed at the levels that everybody's going to want.
Nick, thanks for putting in the work on ESPN Daily.
Anytime, buddy, anytime.
All right, coming up, the very latest from Green Bay, where the relationship between Aaron Rodgers and his Packers is breaking up before our very eyes.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Here's another story I want you to know. If you've ever left, like, a hunk of cheese, some nice Wisconsin cheddar maybe, out in the sun too long at a family picnic, you already have a decent sense of how Aaron Rodgers' relationship with the Green Bay Packers is going right now. On Monday, Rodgers skipped the team's first day of voluntary organized team activities, and then he stopped by SportsCenter to aggressively sing the praises of outgoing anchor Kenny Mayne.
But as long as I've had ESPN, I have tuned in to watch Kenny Mayne on SportsCenter. And it's because of the writing, your delivery, your dry sense of humor, and the way you made sports highlights so much fun. So as a fan, thank you.
While kind of passive-aggressively addressing Packers leadership.
I love the coaching staff, love my teammates, you know, love the fan base in Green Bay. It's incredible, incredible 16 years. It's just kind of about a philosophy, you know, and maybe forgetting that it is about the people that make the thing go. It's about character. It's about culture. It's about doing things the right way.
And then yesterday, we heard from Packers head coach Matt LaFleur.
Aaron definitely knows how we feel about him. You know, how he's such an important part to our football team, such an important part to our organization. And, you know, we're just going to continue to try to work through this and hopefully can get him back in the building at some point.
Rob Domofsky is our man in Green Bay who's been covering the Packers for a quarter century now. So we asked him if he could interpret what all of this means. Rob, where are you right now, man?
I am in the Lambeau Field Atrium, which is where on game day, fans would come and mill around before they go into the stadium. This is one of the big additions to Lambeau Field that Aaron Rodgers probably feels like he's responsible for helping build by winning games and bringing money into Green Bay and to Lambeau Field.
So you're in the middle of all of this. You are in the heart of the organization right now. And I'm curious, man, what has today been like for you? Parsing and trying to run every appearance by Aaron Rodgers through a translator to figure out, okay, what does this tell us about the future?
I think there's some of that. I've been studying the language of Aaron Rodgers for 16 years, and I don't know that I'm fluent in it. So for players who have maybe only been here, like Adrian Amos, for 2 years, or Aaron Jones, who we heard from today, for 4 years, you know, they may not be as fluent as some of us are. I mean, Matt LaFleur told us that, hey, I was tuned in to SportsCenter to watch Kenny Mayne's last show. And he went on to basically praise Kenny Mayne and talk about that, therefore, or thereby avoiding the subject of Rodgers as best he could. But yes, I mean, here's an NFL head coach who probably ordinarily isn't going to be tuned into SportsCenter, is there on a Monday night watching the 11P edition.
So is there any other player like this, Rob? I mean, you've analyzed his words for 16 years. Is there any other player who gets that sort of a treatment in this sport, maybe across all sports, right, where it's sort of like you're analyzing each speech like it's the State of the Union, because maybe there's a clue here, maybe there's significance here.
Right. It was different with Brett Favre because Favre would talk around the issue and give you both sides of it. Like he would start an answer and you would think, oh yeah, he's definitely coming back. And then by the end of the answer, you would say, well, there's no way he's coming back. So it's different than Favre was, because Favre was a talker. Favre was a rambler. If you were doing a story on something and you asked Brett a question about it, half the quote would support what you were trying to do and half the quote would contradict it. So it was just so different.
It does feel like we are also playing by the rules that he is setting, and he can change them if he wants, but he isn't.
It is his game, and we are merely contestants in it. We are contestants. We are studio audience. Some days, you know, we may feel like one, and some days we may feel like the other. And look, I don't know whether he is enjoying this back and forth or not, but I do know that he's in Hawaii and he's hanging out with friends and he's playing Kapalua this week. So he is enjoying something.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that the only person in this entire equation who might plausibly be Alec Trebek would be Aaron Rodgers, host of the game show that we are all trapped inside of. But in terms of what his head coach, his ostensible boss, one of them, Matt LaFleur, what his response to all of this suggested, what's your interpretation of that?
It's that they still aren't sure what they need to do to get him back. And that's the thing right now, is when you talk to people in the organization, is they also want to know what we know. I've had plenty of people in and around the Packers and in and around the NFL ask me, what have you heard? What has he told you? What has his friends told you? We know they've met with him several times. They've talked contract with him. They've talked ways to placate him. And so far, none of it's worked. And that's why they're still in this situation.
Watching the LaFleur press conference today, Rob, it had kind of couples therapy vibes. Like the whole thing of you can only focus on what you can control.
The message is just control what you can control. Try to be the best player you can each and every day. Attack it with the right mindset, a great attitude, great energy, and just try to get better as a player.
Aaron knows how we feel about him. What do you think, Aaron, if we may play armchair Wednesday morning therapist here, what do you think Aaron wants if he could wave a magic wand? What does he want out of all of this that maybe the Packers can't give him?
Yeah, ultimately, if it's nothing the Packers can give him, or if it's nothing that he's willing to accept, I think it's that he wants out. And ultimately, I'm not sure how he comes back into this building at Lambeau Field and plays again. I guess the only thing that it could come down to is ultimately whether they won't trade him, which would then he would have to make a decision, either play or not play. Some point in training camp, they have to decide whether they're moving on and going with Jordan Love or going with Blake Bortles, or that Rodgers is coming back into the mix. That's the point, whether it's early August, mid-August. That's, to me, the breaking point where something has to give one way or another.
Rob Dabowski, contestant on NFL Jeopardy, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Pablo. We'll be talking to you down the road, I'm sure.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.